After he had dismissed his new conversational partner's associates to get squared away in their new quarters and assignments, the general shooed Helton and the other guards out of his office. When he was alone, he pressed a button hidden on the underside of the writing surface of his roll-top desk. A moment later, a figure descended the spiral staircase from the overhead pass-through and battle deck. A splendid touch, that, the general thought for the thousandth time. He hoisted his brandy goblet to the long-dead designers for so well combining space efficiency and elegance. The man who stepped off the brass-railed stair wore black knee-high boots, whipcord riding pants of a color somewhere between the olive drab worn by many of Magog's crew and gray, and a stiff tunic, just off-white, with a high square collar that suggested either a man of the cloth or an ancient Nehru jacket. The general, who loved little better than reading about powerful men of previous eras, had learned all about Nehru from the reference works stored in the database of Magog's unbelievably capacious living steel. Along with being stiff, the tunic had a bulky look to it, as if it concealed body armor. The general knew better. That pleased him, too. He liked having things on people, especially his own subordinates, and most particularly when they were as capable and unscrupulous as his head of intelligence. The new arrival was small and spare, almost desiccated. The skin stretched over his narrow skull was oddly colorless, although more like a sun-bleached version of his jodhpurs than the albino captive who'd just been hustled off, snarling and struggling, with his wrists still secured behind him by nylon restraints. Except for the thin arched eyebrows that might have been drawn on, his head was as bald as the globe of the pre-war Earth on its polished brass stand in the corner of the general's sitting room come office. The only discordant touch in this ensemble of shades of gray was the black mad dog eyeglasses he wore. He never showed himself without them. The general saluted him with his goblet.
Ave, Hubertus. Hail and good morning.
Hubertus smiled thinly. The gesture appeared to hurt his narrow lips, as though they were cracked.
So, do you think it's them?
Let me see.
Hubertus raised a black left hand and began to tick off points on the fingertips.
A short, middle-aged man, deadly in combat and a master gunsmith, who wears a fedora, a leather jacket, and wire-rimmed spectacles. Long-haired albino youth, a sturdy black woman, and a tall, erudite derelict whose mind has a tendency to wander great distances. A tall man with long, curly black hair and an eye patch who habitually carries a sniper's rifle. Finally, a tall woman of remarkable statuesque beauty who, if reports can be believed, has brilliant red hair that moves of its own accord like Medusa's serpents. I wish I had reviewed young Captain Helton's report of yesterday's raid earlier.
Don't beat on yourself. It was just another strong back sweep. We do them all the time. Who knew anybody unusual would be lurking among a gaggle of sorry-ass travelers?
Just so. But it is my business to know, and it embarrasses me when I do not. I detest surprises. Counting the one-eyed man who attempted to resist our men and fell into the big ditch after having been shot, we have accounted for 5 of the 6 individuals who are most commonly and consistently reported as turning up, totally at random, in locations from north to the south.
Except the woman.
Except the woman. Unless there exists another band of 5 individuals precisely fitting descriptions repeated dozens of times, and even the names they gave us match up well with our information, then either the woman has left the party, or she managed to elude Helton's men. Given that she figures prominently in practically all reports we have collected, she is an accomplished survivor. My wild-ass guess is that they simply missed her.
Nobody's ever managed to bag the one-eyed man before.
The trail ends for all of us, General, sooner or later. Few, if any, of the opponents Ryan Cawdor and friends have encountered in their past can have been as well trained and equipped as our soldiers.
I wouldn't be so sure of that, Hubertus. If a third of the stories are true, he was the toughest nut of the whole conspicuously hard-shelled bunch. I'd feel better if we at least had a body. Oh well, like you say, everybody's string plays out sometime. Yesterday must not have been a good day for him. Well, thank you, Hubertus. This is good news overall, damned good news indeed.
The intel chief continued to stand stiffly. The general cocked a heavy eyebrow at him.
You still have something on your mind, S2?
Sir, there's one thing I'm having trouble understanding.
That I find difficult to believe. Go ahead, Hubertus, I'm dying to hear.
I fail to see why Your Excellency posted the new captive to billets as if they were common recruits, rather than remanding them to me for a thorough interrogation.
The general, normally a man of fanatical persistence, had long ago given up trying to break his intel chief from calling him Your Excellency. Maybe he hadn't tried quite as hard as he might have.
The only explanation for their cropping up all over the continent, and no doubt beyond. Sometimes a correlation of reports indicates being spotted in one location mere hours after having been reliably observed 1,000 miles away. The only possible explanation is that they possess the secret of the matter transfer network.
Maybe so. Probably, I guess. But I'm after bigger fish, Hubertus. Much bigger.
The Great Redoubt.
Of course! That's key, Hubertus. Absolutely key.
The general tipped his head to one side and regarded his intel chief quizzically.
You still think I'm chasing will-o'-the-wisps, don't you?
Certainly, Your Excellency has solid reasons for postulating the existence of this Great Redoubt, so-called.
Postulating? My ass! It's in the damned records, Hubertus. In the database files, in black and white.
So are approximately 11,000 pages of documents pertaining to Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster.
But the Great Redoubt exists. The old guys knew the war was coming. They set up their continuity of government program far in advance. We could deduce the existence of the Great Redoubt from what we know of their thoughts and actions, even if they didn't explicitly talk about it in the records.
Your Excellency is no doubt correct.
Then wipe that skeptical smirk off your face. Look, the readout is real. It's key to everything, don't you see? When we find the Great Redoubt, we'll get the Matron system too. Where else would complete documentation on such a system be stored? Where else would its control center be? Mark my words, Hubertus. I am going to find the Great Redoubt, and find it soon. I'm already close enough to smell it. And when I do, we will have your damned Matrans as well.
As you say, sir. That being the case, why not let me probe for what they know?
Because if they are who you believe they are, I don't think torture will break them. Not even your special brand of torture. Like I say, they're hardcore. Even the women. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they all knew the secret of willed self-death.
The general leaned forward in his chair, making emphatic motions with his large hard hands, as if to break down his intel chief's resistance with karate chops.
Look, we're the good guys here. We're working to bring an end to the anarchy, restore peace and prosperity, reclaim the Deathlands for life. These are intelligent people, exceptional people. Hell, they've shown that, even if by some chance they aren't who we think they are. If we give them half a chance, they'll probably come around to us on their own. And even a torture fan like you has to admit that freely given assistance, not to mention information, is a damn sight more reliable than the coerced kind.
Perhaps.
Oh, you're a tough nut yourself, Hubertus. I suppose I like it that way. A damned yes man would make a sorry excuse for a chief intelligence officer. All right, then. They're human. They're not chilled titanium. If we just give them a little time, decent food and decent treatment, not coddling them, mind, just the same as what the rest of our heroic men and women get, they're going to soften. Let their guards down. Let something slip. If we can just get them to relax, eventually we'll learn whatever we need to know.
I suppose anything is possible, General.
Bet your ass. And finally, if they don't come across, we can always torture them.
The intel chief turned to go. When he reached the stairs, the general finally noticed him.
Hubertus.
Your Excellency?
Bring her to me.
Sir?
The missing link. The one unaccounted for. Christy Roth of the mobile hair and radiant beauty. Find her, Hubertus. Bring her to me.
Walking down the passageway through the railway car, J.B. studied the thick back of Banner's neck. The hair was cropped short there, as everywhere on his head, petering out completely before it reached his collar. Just below the last of the hair, offset a bit to the right of the spine, was the red bump of an insect bite, possibly from an early-season deer fly. Staring at that neck, JB thought about wrapping his hands around the neck and squeezing. The presence of the two sec men marching right behind him ensured that such thoughts would remain in the realm of pleasant dreams. That and his friends. Their encounter with the general had been brief, but had conveyed the impression he was just a straightforward, no-bullshit kind of guy. And JB didn't buy that for a minute. Because without saying it, the general had made it very clear that the prisoners, or rather recruits, were all very much hostage to one another's good behavior. That was fine. If he was far from free, he was at least out of the slave compound and out of any kind of shackles. 3 squares a day and a dry, warm, and reasonably safe place to bunk looked like a pretty good deal at this point. He could hack it for a while. The general had to die. That went without saying. You didn't ice the best friend J.B. Dix ever had in his whole life and just go on picking and grinning and sitting in the sun. It was just a matter of time. But there was no reason it shouldn't be the easiest possible time. When they reached what J.B. judged to be roughly the midpoint of the train, they came to a car with a locked steel door. Banner punched a 3-digit code into the pad beside it, being sure to shield it with his body. J.B. made a show of looking elsewhere and taking off his glasses and polishing them. Of course, he was watching like a hawk, but the sergeant was too careful. He yanked open the door.
Who the fuck is it?
Banner! Got a new assistant for you, Leo.
J.B. stood on tiptoe and craned, trying to see around the sergeant, who was taller than he was as well as wider. J.B.'s pulse was already racing. The air that had puffed out when the door opened carried the unmistakable peppery tang of blaster oil.
I hope he's not as dead from the neck up as that last sorry sack of shit you brought me. I've heard about people blowing their own heads off cleaning blasters and never saw anybody triple stoop enough to actually do it before.
No, this one's a real expert.
Yeah, everybody's an expert of daddy's jizz. Even if the better part of you did run down your daddy's hind leg, Banner.
Ho ho. Very fucking funny, Leo.
Banner stepped aside. Past him, JB saw a man a little bit taller than the sergeant, but considerably heavier. Indeed, he looked like a couple hundredweight of potatoes poured into a pair of greasy coveralls. He had graying ginger hair that stuck out in random clumps like bunch grass from all around a face that looked like a collection of fists. The pores on the big red tuber of his nose looked like the holes in a hornet's nest. He was cleaning his hands on a red rag.
In!
Right, buddy.
I'll give you fucking buddy.
The armorer brushed imaginary dust off the leather sleeves of his jacket and strolled past Banner without glancing at the man. Leo jerked up his multiple chins in a peremptory gesture.
Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out, Banner.
You do enjoy your dream date.
The sergeant backed out and shut the door with what JB thought was unnecessary force. He looked around. He was in a well-lit and well-equipped armorer's shop. It looked like heaven to him.
Name's Dix. JB Dix.
From somewhere, Leo whipped out a silvery hand blaster and aimed it at JB's forehead.
Show me the secret of the M9, motherfucker. I'll put some hair on the wall.